Hi, welcome back to Cambridge Inside Out. I'm Judy Nathans.
And I'm Robert Winters.
We're back in our little square boxes, or rectangular boxes, whatever you call it.
In our Eve of Inauguration special.
Eve, do you remember that song?
The Eve of Destruction?
Oh my gosh.
Barry McGuire.
I knew it was a Barry. Okay, thank you.
Yeah.
That was during the Vietnam War process.
I think it was Barry McGuire. You know, I always get confused because there were two songs.
Wait a minute, Barry and the Remains?
No. There was Barry McGuire. There was If You're Going to San Francisco, Be Sure to Wear Flowers in Your Hair.
Yeah, and then
Eve of Destruction, both of which are kind of contemporary. And I'll often confuse who actually is the artist for each.
Up later. All right. Very good.
Yeah. So, anyway, back here in good old Cambridge.
Yeah, because it's been 2 weeks, but there's been a couple. Well, we never did talk about the 4th, which was right before our last meeting, but we kept talking about the meeting, whatever. So what's going on?
What is going on? Well, yeah. I mean, there's a number of things.
Yeah, the COVID and all that. Yeah.
I mean, I won't say too much about it, but I think right now, even as we speak, there is a City Council subcommittee meeting going on, Zoom only, not on the web, not television.
Yeah, so have you ever figured out why? Is it because of timing that they submitted it too late?
You know, I don't know, but let's just say what it was. This was a joint committee meeting of the Public Safety and the Veterans Affairs and University Relations Committee, right?
Oh, it's a joint one. I thought it was just Public Safety.
No, it's joint. And it was specific. I think it's a joint meeting probably for political reasons.
You're talking about tonight's meeting that's going on right now.
Yes. Yeah. Okay. All right. So the topic had to do with, it originally began with police inventory, but then it's now morphed into.
You're talking about the meeting. Okay.
Yeah. But
in
now.
Two meetings. Right.
Right. Yes. So now the one tonight is now specifically, it's no longer about, you know, Bearcats parked in Lafayette Square.
Well, it's about the whole defund the police and how can we better. Yeah.
Right. Exactly. So they're pursuing that. And this is a highly politicized matter, make no mistake about it.
Oh, well, sure.
Right? You know, one need only look at the campaign donations for certain candidates and the guest list for some of these meetings to sort of see the correlation. But the thing is that I think it's a joint committee because I don't think either party, whatever party means here, wants one individual or two counselors to own this issue exclusively.
Okay. I mean, but I'm hoping they record it because otherwise
it is being recorded because I was actually in the meeting for a while.
Saw that it was being recorded.
Yeah. And it's basically let me not bother to characterize it. I was not impressed with what I was hearing. Let me leave it at that.
Did you know who was going to speak?
I knew at least one person who was going to speak, but the rest of it, I really don't know. There is a kind of a point of view here that basically says that, you know, police should not exist. And that seemed to be the dominant.
If they exist, they shouldn't have guns. Now, I have a whole other thing about people carrying guns, but you watched the meeting that was on the eve of destruction. They had the first meeting of this about the police inventory. And I kept thinking, really? This should have been postponed. With this going on in our capital and to have a meeting on de-arming the police, basically, is what I was hearing from some of the speakers. I thought it was like, really? I mean, I felt like I was in another world.
If some of these individuals and counselors could put aside some of the emotionality of all of this and basically parse it out enough to sort of make a distinction between best practices for dealing with people who might otherwise feel vulnerable versus completely, obliterating the police, in an environment where we actually saw the importance of having police power in the case of the Capitol.
I think I said that to you that I see this going on in the CAT because I had it on CNN while I'm trying to listen to the meeting, and I listened to this young guy who said police don't need guns. If they take this job, that's the risk of the job. You're going to die. And
that was an extremely
offensive. Oh my God. One of the last speakers was someone, this Michael
Daniluk.
Right.
White, who, Michael, yeah, who I've known for 25
yeah,
years.
Yeah, who's been on the force 30,
yeah.
many years, talked about the bear cat, barely noticed it the last time. And I was thinking to myself, where is that bear cat, you know, in front of our Capitol when we're going to need it? Just to, right. I mean, I am not that. It's also a protective mechanism. It's not there to mow people down.
I mean, the bottom line, you know, because this probably doesn't deserve too much more, but it's the bottom line is I believe we do have a police department that is receptive to good ideas.
Yes.
And to whatever degree people can come up with some good ideas and people can hash them out and find better ways to do things.
Right.
Great. And
I, you know, I just think that this, you know, bringing up examples from over the country and then, I mean, yes, there is a problem and we sometimes disagree. There is a problem, I think.
Well, even at the meeting that was happening right now, they had people calling in from San Francisco and Oakland and whatever, you know. They're politicizing it and I guess that was sort of inevitable and I'll just sort of let it play itself out, you know.
Yeah.
I'll hear the good stuff and I'll ignore the bad stuff, you know.
Right.
Now, one thing that's a little less controversial, but it also brought a lot of people out to a recent city council meeting, perhaps on the January 11th meeting, was it?
The hostile architecture.
I was going to talk about the hostile architecture. Okay, right. So at first, there was a city council order.
Yes.
For co-sponsors calling for the MBTA to reconsider the placement of these separator bars on benches.
Which I hadn't noticed, but I haven't been on the subway for 10 months.
Same here, so I wouldn't know, right? Yeah,
right.
But it was a little absurd at times to sort of listen to some of the testimony, quite honestly. Mm-hmm. If it was a matter of them putting in barriers just because they were being mean to people who might be sleeping on a bench,
they have to get into the subway to sleep on the bench.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. Exactly.
Siemens brought up too.
Exactly. But I have to say that, you know, if in a city with some resources, if people want to believe that the right way to be kind to people who have housing in you know who are unhoused is to basically let them sleep on a subway bench, I think we got a little. I think we can do better than that. And I think there was one person, Valerie Bonds, who was very, very clear about that. Actually, she was the smartest person in the room.
Valerie and Michael were the two.
Yes.
And the rest of them were either students that aren't going to be around, or I really admire people that want to give public comment, but they were reading from a script, half of them.
Yeah.
But
isn't that kind of what we've been seeing now for a while?
Bring out your list. Either it's about bikes, or it's going to be about getting the home, you know.
Yeah.
And they're all well-intentioned, but I just feel like, come on, I want to hear from people that live here.
Some of them do live here, but that's true.
I'm not saying they don't live here. I'm just saying that have long-term, you know, roots here that, because we're not hearing a lot from those people.
You know, there are political movements afoot, and it's not all Trumpers marching on the Capitol. No. I mean, there are other political movements of various sorts. We seem to be in a period where, you know, organizing around political issues is kind of a thing.
Well, you know, when you go so far to the right, you are going to, I mean, there's it's all about balance. And you and I mean, I am in the middle. I admit it. I don't admit it. It's like, I don't feel bad about that. I feel like you need extremes to kind of define where we are.
But, you know, to me, as a person who's been following civic and political affairs locally in Cambridge for a very long time, I still kind of see municipal government as in much more ordinary terms. Yeah.
It shouldn't be so politicized.
Yeah, right. You know, how are we planning our transportation well? Are we maintaining the city well? Are we handling our waste well?
Right.
You know, is the water system healthy and intact and whatever? Right. I think of it more very, very basic terms.
Basic services.
So we've been seeing for a while now is sort of a painting over of municipal government with these sort of larger political issues so that people are using this sort of almost as a theatrical stage
a
for sort of carrying out political organizing. Yeah. Now, to whatever degree some good things come out of that, okay, great. Yeah. You know,
yeah.
But it is to me a little tiresome to just sort of listen to the script, the scripted remarks.
Yeah, and it's tedious. I mean, when they're all, I don't know. It's like it's just
one. Remember, it was one. There's one person who actually spoke at that public safety committee meeting recently. No, it's a city council meeting recently about the hostile architecture. He says, the DSA, the local DSA branch asked me to come here and speak about this, but then he actually spoke in a contrary way to what they wanted. So in other words, the local Democratic right. Socialists of America, yeah. which is kind of in league with the Our Revolution group, they basically were just saying, well, we're going to find a way to use, get some air time at city council meetings pretty much to sort of push something. When did hostile architecture on the MBTA suddenly become the central feature in everybody's radar? It's because they were told this is going to be the central feature on your radar.
Are we talking about the same guy that actually said, forget going to city council. The Black Panthers didn't go to the LA city council. They started their own breakfast program.
That's right. Same fellow.
And I love that. I mean, yeah, it's just, yeah. I mean, yes. Put your money where your mouth is. Go do it yourself. I mean,
yeah.
Not about hostile architecture. You know what I mean?
If you recognize a problem, solve it yourself.
Right.
If the primary purpose of this rhetoric is just political organizing, then solving it yourself is not what they want to do.
Well, right? it's having,
you know, they little,
yeah,
political yeah. organizers benefit from the existence of a problem, and they always have. So solving a problem is not in the best interest of political organizers. It is best to keep the problems intact so that your organizing can be fueled. So,
I mean, community organizers, you organize around there's trash in the street. Let's get that fixed. And then you have a group.
All right. Maybe I should make it
traditional community organizing.
Traditional community organizers.
Barack Obama was a community organizer.
The kind of people who create community gardens, for example, right? Or like you and me who help get recycling programs off the ground.
Right. Yeah. I mean, there was an issue, right? You had an issue recycling, and it became part of the city structure. So
exactly.
It's kind of the way things can go.
But you know, when I think about organizing, getting recycling going, this is why I know I'm a little silly sometimes about it, but I always make a distinction between the words civic and political, because to me, organizing
that's a good point. Yeah,
promote a recycling program or things like that
for
the public good is largely a civic endeavor. It's not because you're trying to take over the state house or elect more democratic socialists.
My way or the highway.
It's highly, very much a civic matter. And I kind of like to keep my civics and political stuff somewhat separate.
I like that. That's a good, interesting.
Yeah, that's the reason why I put together a Cambridge Civic Journal rather than a Cambridge political tirade, you know. But anyway, the issue at hand about the so-called hostile architecture, it was ambiguous in that if you ask the people at the MBTA, maybe ambiguous isn't the best word here, disputable. Right. They said the reason why we were putting dividers on the benches
was for ADA reasons.
Right. And, you know, I'm a little older now, you know, and I've sat down in things and realized, it's a little tough to get up, you know.
Yeah.
And just having a blank flat bench, you know, I can kind of
understand. I really think that was the main reason, because you don't want homeless people sleeping in the subway. I'm sorry.
No, I think we can do better than that.
We can do better, right.
But the thing is, I will take them on at their word that it was primarily an ADA matter. If there's a way they can modify it, great. But the thing is listen, back in the 90s, I was on a Central Square committee that we were in charge of making recommendations for some infrastructure changes to Central Square. Mm-hmm. And we recommended putting in a huge number of benches. And we didn't put in any dividers. And we were very aware of the fact these could become a place where, you know, people who had a little to drink might spend their time and whatever. But our attitude about it was a little radical in that we said, well, if there are X number of drunkards who want to occupy the benches, we'll put in twice as many benches, and then they won't define it. You know,
where are those benches?
there were a lot more, but over time, and again, I am somewhat sympathetic to some of the points of view of the business community too, mm-hmm. is that if you had one of those little, we call them living rooms, they actually faced each other and there was a pedestrian scale lighting at the center of it. So it was designed very specifically to create a place where you could sit down and talk to your
friends. I think I remember those, yeah.
So some of them are still configured that way. And that was the original design. Yeah. But if it was in front of a business and there were basically substance abusers there all the time, all day long,
the
business owners, if they had a friend on the city council, mm-hmm. they basically applied a little selective pressure and then miraculously the bench disappeared or got moved. Yeah. Yeah. So a lot of them got moved around. Some of them just disappeared. Uh-huh. And you know, part of me is, you know, one of the people who was recommending the original design. I kind of resent that in a way, but I also at the same time understand their concerns.
Yeah.
You know, but as I would point out, I said, removing benches does not cure alcoholism. Yeah. Right. And the thing is that the substance abusers in Central Square are there. And I hope we can find better ways than the usual enabling that we do to address that. But you know, if they're not going to be there, they'll be in Carbon Plaza. They'll find a place. They'll always find a place.
The other thing that I kept hearing from some of these public commenters was about the residents and the citizens. And I'm thinking, a lot of people come here because these come here and they're not from Cambridge. Some are, but a lot aren't. I mean, let's just, you know, I just didn't like that feeling like we're doing something against our citizens and our residents, you know, of Cambridge,
right.
and they deserve better. And yeah.
Know, there is this sort of the paradox of liberalism, you know, and I'm not saying this as a criticism. It's more of just a recognition of what is that if you unilaterally do the right thing, however you choose to define it, you can actually paradoxically end up making your problem worse.
Yeah.
In other words, if there's a problem of substance abuse and you create the resources for people like that, then they will come to you. Mm-hmm. So you'll end up with more people with substance abuse issues than you had before, because not every other city is so kind as to be.
Well, speaking of that, I mean, they talked about a lot of people coming to Cambridge to get testing for COVID. And they're not asking where they're from. So a lot of non-Cambridge people are getting tested, which—
Well, now now I think they've created kind of
a dual system. Really? I hope so. I mean—
Yeah, separate lines.
I think they're still testing them, but you don't have
to. Yeah. So, but the thing is, so if you live here, I think you can skate on through a little bit quicker, you know. But that's sort of the problem, you know. It's like, and again, I'm not trying to like be critical of people wanting to do good things. It's just that if you unilaterally do good things and try and be very kind-hearted, you can end up actually paradoxically ending up with a problem.
But the other thing that was really kind of annoying to me was that the people commenting on the architecture also they brought up the whole hotel issue, which was back in April or May, as if nothing has happened. And I'm so glad Mark McGovern made the comment.
He was exactly right.
Because it's like, they made it sound like we don't do anything.
Well, you know, there is a political point of view.
It's like, know your history, you know?
Well,
like,
also let's understand your limits. You know, as Clint Eastwood said, a man's got to know his limitations, right? The thing is that just because you think it would be a nice thing for hotels to be used for a particular public purpose, but it ain't your hotel. You can't just snap your fingers and make it so. Mm-hmm. So as Mark McGovern pointed out, we went looking for partners to try and create extra shelter space, and that we couldn't find the partners. So eventually they have managed for the short term. They've contracted with, forget the name of the place, but it's on Green.
I was really
11 to 15 Green, you know, which is a state-funded shelter, you know, during the COVID emergency. Mm-hmm. The city did enormous things in terms of the war memorial and
something about this. You're talking about the New England, there's some bed.
Yeah, it was a
school or something.
Yeah, it was a school. It was like a dormitory for some school, but the students aren't around, so the space was available for the short term. Yeah. So they made it available. You know, good for them. It's great. Yeah. You know, but you know, it's it doesn't solve problems long term. No. Hopefully coronavirus will be in people's right. rear view mirror sometime within the next year, we hope, you know, and then it'll be better. Or at least so we hope. By the way, I do want to mention, I don't want to obsess at this point because it is only January, but, you know, I still check the listings of people pulling papers
yes.
with the state. I shouldn't really say pulling papers because that kind yeah. of means election commission, but
you're talking about the campaign.
For the municipal elections, yeah. Tomorrow is actually the deadline for school committee candidates to file their campaign finance reports for the previous calendar year. So
for the previous.
So I hope they all do that. There are some notoriously slow candidates who don't ever get them in or whatever. And I think we ought to just start, you know, taking names at this point, really. I should start publishing and saying, this person is 15 days late. This person never did the year 2000. What's with that?
Well,
a little shame, public shaming here.
Wait, if they never did it, there's no penalty?
There's supposed to be. Oh. But, you know, we're very kind, I suppose. But the thing is that on the city council side, one other person who actually did pull papers with the election commission one year, but never followed through, is a fellow named Santos Carrasquillo. And yeah, I may be mispronouncing the name. I'm not sure. He was affiliated with the Gorey House down on Windsor Street, and but I don't know much about him really. But you know, so he also filed papers. So we actually have five people now. Actually, maybe what I'll do here is since I do have it here again. I don't want to obsess on this too much here, but
yeah.
The people who have actually filed with the state are Franz Pierre, Tonya Hicks, who has a Facebook page, candidate page, Dana Boster, Joe McGurk, who also has I have a link in there for a Facebook candidate page, and then Santos Carrasquillo is the latest person. I don't really know a whole lot about these folks. I am planning to meet with Joe McGurk in the next few days. There are some possible candidates who, you know, and this is a kind of a short list. I think Nicola Williams is a possibility again. Patrick Barrett has been stating his thoughts about possibly running, and several others. A fellow Jeffrey McNary, who ran a zero-funded campaign 2 years ago, apparently has sent out a word saying he's thinking of doing it again. There are four incumbents who are actively raising money. Mm-hmm. For their campaigns. I believe there are going to be some of the challengers from 2 years ago. You know, I'll just mention, you know, people like Burhan Huzim or Risa Mednick or a couple others who may, you know, come out of the woodwork again and be candidates again.
Well, should they be coming out of the woodwork, or what have they been doing for the city?
Well, you know, in my view, and I think we said this 2 weeks ago, you know, if you really want to be a candidate, you know, you can't just disappear and then show up and be a candidate again, you know.
You should be giving public comment, or you should be, you know, I don't know, doing something.
You know, just be involved in doing something constructive for the city, you know.
And we're not saying people aren't, we're just saying that would be.
Right, exactly. You know, but I feel a lot better when I actually see people have been involved and continue to be involved in things. So I imagine some of those other candidates, you know, the way I look at it is, did they file a dissolution report, you know, to sort of say they're not going to be a candidate anymore? Some of them did. I think Ms. Musgrave.
Are you talking about past candidates? Oh, Adrian.
Yeah. So, you know, and Charles Franklin have filed dissolution reports.
What happens to the money?
If they had a candidate loan, they pay themselves back.
What if they just had the money that someone gave them?
They can donate it to other campaigns within limits. They can donate to charity and
many that's good. Do that. All right. You just can't donate to themselves.
You can't just pocket it. No, I'm sorry. You can't do that. Right. But, I expect there'll be some of those names from 2 years ago will show up again. I don't really know what the viability is. I think you're going to see, you know, people are going to try and redefine the issues. this year? You know, will it all be about racial equity? Will it be about climate change? Will it be
vaccination?
And the wild card in all of this too is that people have now acclimated to the idea of early voting and absentee voting, and though there is currently no provision for that for municipal elections. Yes.
There wasn't early voting for municipal? No.
There's a home rule petition calling for it.
Yeah, you're right.
But I wouldn't be at all surprised. Unless the virus is completely vanquished by then, I can't see any way we are not going to have some kind of massive absentee voting. So, and then that could affect voter turnout, and voter turnout in municipal elections is usually a fraction of it is what is in state and federal elections. If that changes, then there's a lot of wild cards on the table.
Yeah.
In terms of how to design a campaign, viability of candidates, et cetera. Yeah. So there's a lot, there's a lot of water to come under the bridge between now and then, you know, it is still, I'll continue to look more or less every day just to sort of see if there's any changes. And I'm meeting with candidates, sometimes even in person. You know, and
but I don't want to meet with them on the show.
I don't think we really need to use the show for that purpose.
But
I mean, if we did anything at all, maybe we could do a pre-recorded something or other, just as a cavalcade of candidates at some point. not really. I mean, it's the reason why I don't like going to candidate forums much either, because it feels too much like a beauty contest where you just put your little shtick.
And you don't get much to say. It's not really.
And I honestly, it just doesn't do it for me anymore. So.
But you mean you won't be tuning in? It might all be Zoom. I mean, who knows?
It's a lot to be decided. So.
Yeah. All right. So anyway. We just have a half a minute left.
Yeah. Oh, by the way, one last thing it was at the January 11th meeting. There was the 11th meeting. There was a call for wanting to do direct financial assistance to people during the COVID emergency.
Yeah.
Which is something which I think people need to understand. There are damn good reasons why you don't want to have local municipalities being able to just basically give out.
And we have that millions fund.
That's it.
Mayor's fund. Okay.
Anyway, we're out of time. So see you next time on Cambridge Inside Out.
Bye.